All right. By the middle of 1981, Menachem Begin was convinced that Israel could not afford to wait for Saddam Hussein to finish his nuclear reactor. Iraq already had aircrafts that can carry nuclear weapons, and he felt that they had missiles that could handle nuclear warheads. Decision was made that the Osirak reactor, where the weapon program was based, before it went online, it had to be eliminated. It posed a threat to the region. 3:55 p.m. June 7th, Israeli F-15 and F-16 jets took off from the Etzion Air Force Base. June 7th, 1981, this is tail end of my Shana Be'ir. I remember the news, I remember everyone talking about it. Here it was, Erev Shavuos, it took off in the south for the 1,100 kilometer trip to Iraq. The route took them through Saudi Arabia and Jordanian airspace, so the planes had to fly extremely low to avoid detection. Not only that, they flew in a formation that on a radar, if it would be picked up, it would look like it was a commercial aircraft. 5:35 p.m., pilots identified the glistening dome of the reactor, and the Iraqis were caught by surprise. We'll explain exactly why and how. Helplessly, they fired anti-aircraft batteries after the Israelis dropped their bombs. It took 1 minute and 20 seconds to destroy the reactor. Okay, joy in Israel, but immediate condemnation all around the world. Universally criticized, Israel was criticized for an unprovoked attack on a sovereign nation. The United Nations passed a resolution condemning Israel. The United States supported Israel's staunchest friends, the United States, were so angry that the president, this was Reagan, the president ordered the suspension of the delivery of F-16s to Israel. However, a decade later, afterwards, when the Gulf War broke out, United States officials and the rest of the world learned how close Saddam Hussein had come to building a nuclear reactor and how determined he was to achieving their goal. They breathed a sigh of relief. I remember seeing a cartoon in the newspapers having two boxes. 1981, the United Nations condemning Israel for blowing up the reactor. And then it said 1991, the United Nations praising Israel for having blown up the nuclear reactor now that they were in the middle of the Gulf War, and who knows what would have been if Saddam Hussein had nuclear weapons. The Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, sent the Israeli Air Force David Ivry a thank you note during Desert Storm in 1991 for having taken out the nuclear capabilities of Saddam Hussein 10 years earlier. Now, some background that we need to understand in regard to this raid on Iraq, known as Operation Opera, if you look it up in Wikipedia. Iraq showed interest in gaining nuclear capabilities already in the 1960s. This was first provided by the USSR. In 1970, Saddam Hussein takes over. Now, Saddam Hussein was a homicidal maniac. He was referred to as the Butcher of Baghdad, and he bragged about annihilating Israel. No other country in the Middle East had the size and the resources to do it. And after the Yom Kippur War in 1973, he realized conventional weapons would not do the job. And therefore, he went about stepping up the nuclear development in his country. He received resources from France, and he builds a power plant. Now, the French, they name it Osirak. But, here's really weird, Saddam Hussein names the nuclear power plant Tammuz. Now, why Tammuz? Tammuz in Aramaic means hot. It is a Babylonian name. Okay, the months that we took are names of the Babylonian months. And the Ramban writes that the reason why we take these names, and many of them after gods, why do we take these names? Seems like Avodah Zarah. Because we should never forget where we came. So we came back to build up Bayit Sheni. So we kept These names, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, these are all Babylonian names. In the Torah, it just says Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni, Chodesh HaShlishi. As I said, the Malbim says Tammuz is hot in Aramaic, and it's a summer month, as we know. Why do you call it Tammuz? Because the Ba'ath party came to power in Tammuz. Not only that, the actual name for the nuclear reactor was the 17th of Tammuz, Shivasar B'Tammuz, because that was the actual date that the Ba'ath party came to power. Now, Israel was concerned, but at the same time, in 1980, Saddam Hussein entered into what would be a 9-year war with Iran, okay, which would have 1 million casualties from both sides. This will play a later role, but many Jews felt, okay, great, let Goyim kill Goyim. They'll continue fighting, they'll forget about us, and therefore there's no need for us to get involved. Now, earlier, 1975, a scientific publication predicted that within 7 years, Saddam will be able to produce a nuclear bomb. Once again, calling himself a modern-day Nebuchadnezzar. This was his role model. He would annihilate Israel. Now that Egypt had made peace, he wanted to become the leader of the Arab world by destroying Israel. This was his goal. 1978, Menachem Begin has a cabinet meeting about the bomb, and he had a split decision. Ariel Sharon, who's a minister in his government, he favors a military option. On the other hand, you have lots of opponents, including the defense minister at the time, Azar Weitzman, including the head of military intelligence, including the head of the Mossad, and many more. Begin, however, obsessed as he was with Israel's security, orders the chief of staff, Rafael Eitan, to come up with a plan. In the meantime, while all of this is going on, lots of, I don't know, we'll call them coincidences, seem to happen to delay Saddam Hussein. For example, coincidence, a French ship was about to ship nuclear resources to Iraq, mysteriously blew up, go figure. Or another coincidence, a major scientist working on the bomb suddenly committed suicide, you know, falling on his dagger in his back repeatedly. So certain things started to happen. Once again, you know, Israel never took any responsibility for these coincidences, but it certainly delayed Saddam Hussein. In the United States, Jimmy Carter, who is president at this time, although a huge opponent of nuclear proliferation, saw no threat to the United States from Iraq. And since the United States viewed Iran as the enemy to the United States, still holding 53 hostages that they took once the Shah was deposed, he didn't want to reign in Iraq. Plus, the State Department didn't believe he had it in him to nuke Israel. The Mossad psychological profile of Saddam Hussein absolutely disagreed and felt that not only did he have the guts, he was absolutely bent on doing this. Another question that the cabinet had to deal with was if the military option was even doable. The mission was so difficult that 3 pilots died in training. They had to fly less than 100 feet above ground at top speed. One slight hill can kill you. The mission was so secretive, right? You know, of the 3 pilots, one who died was the son of Rafael Eitan, the head of the army that was given this task. Now, how secretive was the mission? One Knesset member, Yitzhak Shamir, who was a high-ranking member of Menachem Begin's cabinet, would later go on to succeed him as prime minister, asked his son, Yair would later on himself become a Knesset member, but at this point, he was in the Israeli Air Force. He asked his son if such a mission was possible, not knowing that Yair Shamir was actually in charge of the training, and Yitzhak Shamir, the father, would not find out about this for years. 1980, Menachem Begin gets better conditions for the raid that he so wanted to do. Moshe Dayan, who was the foreign minister, resigned, and Shamir, a hawk, took over. Azar Weitzman, the defense minister, resigned, and Menachem Begin took the post for himself. plus Yuval Ne'eman, the head of Israel's Atomic Energy Committee, warned that Iraq will produce a bomb within 2 to 3 years. Also, because of the Iran-Iraq war, the Iraqi nuclear reactor went cold, and therefore the attack now would cause less casualties. So the cabinet debates, and they have a number of issues they have to deal with. Number one, you know, it's possible that the entire mission would fail. We'd have captured pilots. How do we deal with this tragedy? Number two, they didn't yet have, Iraq did not yet have a bomb. So why are we going into action? As we said, Iran is already distracted, is distracting Iraq. Why are we even going in? The other side would say, we can't wait. Third issue, this will unite the entire Arab world against Israel, and therefore we shouldn't do it. Those in favor would say, the Arab world doesn't need any reason to unite. They're already united against us, and they hate us anyway. Now, Menachem Begin was shaped by the Holocaust, and he would not allow Israel's defense to be in the hands of others. Now's the time. It's put to a vote, and 5-4, the vote goes in favor of the raid. Now, the opposition leader to Menachem Begin was Shimon Peres, and he was absolutely opposed to a raid in Iraq, and therefore, because elections were coming up very soon, Begin felt that if Likud lost, it would never happen, and Israel's security would be at risk. Begin moved it up to Erev Shavuos, Sunday. Why Sunday? Because there would be less foreign workers there, as it would be a holiday. In the end, 10 Iraqis and one French person were killed in the Israeli raid, and Israel compensated the French family. When they took off, Begin said, Hashem Yirachem Aleihem, and then proceeded to say Tehillim for the next hour. Now, a conventional war, a bomb from a conventional war, could take out a block. A nuclear bomb could take out a city. Now, France, as we said, they had built this reactor. They made all sorts of deals. Iraq would buy from France 100,000 Renaults, French-made car. Iraq wouldn't raise gas prices for 5 years. It was in their interest. And France builds this reactor for Israel. Now, Israel, they have no way of getting there. The only planes that they have are F-4s, and they have an F-15, but only an F-16 that they felt would be able to make the trip. But it took 5 years to order this plane, and they needed it now. But here's where unbelievable Hashgacha Pratis comes in. 1979, the Shah had made 100 orders of F-16s, and now the Shah falls. So the United States asks Israel, do you guys want, we already have them built, 8 new F-16s. Israel sends 12 pilots to the United States for training, and they ask all sorts of questions that they need to know. How far could this plane travel without being refueled? And they were told 800 miles, 900 miles, it would be the maximum if it was stripped down, carrying nothing. But Israel needed to send this plane with extra fuel, because it was making a return trip, and each plane needed to carry a bomb. It needed to travel 1,200 miles in order to make the round trip from Israel to Baghdad and back. Okay? Basically, it's impossible, but Israel was going to give it a shot. They had 8 pilots. The 8th pilot, the one who drew, well, we'll see, not necessarily. The one, okay, if you come in, the first planes could actually catch them by surprise, drop the bomb, and get out of there before they start shooting back, assuming everything goes perfectly. But once you drop the first bomb, you're going to have anti-aircraft missiles shot at the planes. So whoever is flying at the end, a lot better chance that you will be shot down. Israel drew, the Israeli pilots, they drew the straws, and the short straw, that would be the 8th pilot, the most dangerous. Turns out, Ilan Ramon did not draw the short straw, but he volunteers to fly the 8th plane. Who's Ilan Ramon? For those who don't know, he was the Israeli pilot that went up, the astronaut that went up and the Challenger that tragically it made the flight, but on the way re-entry into the Earth orbit, it blew up. He had done such an amazing Kiddush Hashem. He was showing how he brought a Sefer Torah from his parents, you know, survivors of the Holocaust. He brought it up on the plane. He made Kiddush, you know, from the plane. He was a person who wasn't religious, but he was traditional. He was representing Am Yisrael. He did all these things from the space shuttle. So earlier in his career, he flew the eighth and final plane that blew up the reactor in Iraq. He says, I am the only single person amongst the pilots. I'm flying the eighth. And he does. He flies the eighth plane. Now they're flying low, 65, 75 feet above the ground at absolute top speed. Most missions like this would go maybe for 20 minutes. This was a 3-hour journey. Then they would have to elevate to about 5,000 feet and drop down and bomb the area one at a time. Now, anti-aircraft artillery and surface-to-air missiles were the best in Iraq, and they would be shooting at them. This was this crazy mission that Israel was proposing. As they took off, they take off in the south, they end up flying over Jordan. King Hussein, who himself had been a pilot, he was out on a yacht when they take off, and he understands what's going on. And he calls the Secretary of Defense to warn Iraq. But yet, no attack takes place over Jordanian land or Saudi Arabia. And now, hundreds of miles into Iraq, they see on the ground 400 armed soldiers. They were doing an exercise. Now, every soldier is taught to be able to read the, you know, the writing on the sides of the planes to understand if it's friend or foe. And they should have been spotted as Israeli planes, and they should have been fired upon. But instead, the soldiers seemingly didn't understand, and they smiled at the pilots and waved at them who were flying so low. And they and the soldiers continue their exercise while the Israeli pilots continue on their way. It's a crazy thing. An elite unit, and they don't recognize the planes. Now, why we have the Iraq obviously puts their best anti-aircraft people protecting their nuclear reactor. How in the world did they not shoot down the planes? So again, unbelievable hashgacha pratis. They happened to just taken a coffee break, and before they took their coffee break, they turned off the radar that needed them time to warm up. And therefore, only after the firing, you know, did the radar go on, and it took some time, and they only were able to start firing at planes number 7 and 8. And coincidentally, or again we call hashgacha pratis, the planes get out without being hit. Now, they're flying back. The 400 soldiers begin firing at the planes. Those who were out there that saw them before, smiling before, they're firing at the planes, and the Iraqi soldiers shoot down 12 of their own planes. All 8 Israeli planes escape the enemy fire. And now they're returning home at 38,000 feet, and they're flying on empty. They're not gliding. They're actually flying. And no one is scrambling. No one's scrambling over Iraq. No one's scrambling jets over Saudi Arabia. No one's scrambling jets over Jordan. And all 8 planes come back from this, what should have been a suicide mission. All the bombs hit their target and utterly destroyed the nuclear reactor in Iraq. Okay, unbelievable joy. Crazy thing. The next morning, they go out, you know, the technicians go out and they check the planes. Not one of them starts. Not one. They had been training with these for 8 months. Every day they're training. Today, not one plane started. And the next morning, and over time, one started one started up again, then another, and by the end of a few weeks, they were all started, they're all working again. But what happened? The United States couldn't believe it. How in the world did it travel 1,200 miles, extra fuel, with bombs? Israel made no modifications. It flew on empty most of the way back. How? Obviously, hashgacha pratis, it's crazy. The next day, Saddam Hussein kills everyone who's over the rank of major in his Air Force. The United States, as I said before, is incensed because it's destabilized Iraq, who they favored over Iran. Plus, Carter had never briefed Ronald Reagan about the situation when he took office, and therefore he was surprised. In the end, the United Nations with the United States condemns Israel, and Begin responded. His response was, better condemnation without a nuclear reactor to a reactor without condemnation. He refused to apologize and said Jewish children will never be gassed again. You know, not on my watch. And today, in 2020, we have, you know, as Yogi Berra would put it, deja vu all over again with Iran. We have a homicidal maniac boasting of annihilating Israel. We have a country not allowing inspectors and breaking agreements. We have Europe and Asia supplying resources for fueling. We have weakness of the West. We have unexplained sabotaging and murders of those involved. We have Israeli intelligence against military action. This time, if Israel does it, it will be much more difficult. A, it's been done before, and they are prepared. B, there are more reactors, they're spread out over the country, and they're deeper underground. Will Netanyahu rise to the occasion? I don't know. Begin declared Dam Yehudi Eino Hefker. Jewish blood is not cheap. It was his finest hour.